This complacency had its own precedents. As coal-rich Britain went to war in 1914, it became clear that for a century, her politicians had neglected the strategic raw materials, from bauxite and non-ferrous metals to oil, that would eventually become vital. 4 years after the First World War ended, the history of the British Ministry of Munitions candidly described the severity of the negligence. The early 21st century United States, in turn, seems as neglectful of the Chinese challenge as early 20th century Britain was of the German one. As we have seen, in 2005 polls, the populations of many supposed U.S. allies rated China more favorably than they did the United States, and scarcely a week goes by without reports of the Chinese cutting new oil and gas deals with Canada, Latin America, and the Middle East. On top of this, the Chinese have the sort of pioneering record in energy that the Germans circa 1900 had in science, chemistry, and engineering. Not long ago, one Chinese website posted impressive petroleum-related references from the 11th century Mengzi Bitan volumes. The lesson of the past is that timely reforms do not emerge, and deep, unanswerable national issues generate weak and compromising politicians or zealous bumblers. Second-raters certainly dominated in Spain and Holland. So too in Britain. Indeed, the collapse of the World War I coalition government under Lloyd George was followed, in the nearly two decades prior to Winston Churchill's wartime accession in 1940, by a quartet of second-rate prime ministers and ineffective coalitions. The four prime ministers in question, Bonner Law, Ramsay MacDonald, Stanley Baldwin, and Neville Chamberlain, are remembered as historical pygmies in the towering company of the Walpoles, Pitts, Gladstones, and Disraelis who governed during Britain's 18th and 19th century ascent. Depending on how history looks back from the 2010s and 2020s, the two Bush presidents could be associated with U.S. decline in a way that the hard-to-remember leaders of ebbing Spain, Holland, and Britain avoided. The U.S. difficulty in facing these problems has been matched by a similar failure of leadership, incapacity of the parties, and aristocratization or sclerosis of institutions. One troubling aspect is the phenomenon I discussed in 2004 in American Dynasty. This is the emergence within the U.S. system of a great family politics, most vivid on the Republican side in the mediocre father-son inheritance of the Bush dynasty, but also debilitating for the Democratic Party. The 2000 Democratic nominee, Vice President Albert Gore, was the son of a U.S. senator and ill-positioned to challenge the politics of privileged descent. Bush's challenger in 2004, Massachusetts Senator John Kerry, operated under a similar handicap. He was sponsored by another political dynasty, the Kennedys, was married to the rich widow of a Republican U.S. senator, was a member, like George W. Bush, of the elite Skull and Bones Society at Yale, and he even possessed another revealing link. He had served as Lieutenant Governor of Massachusetts under Governor Michael Dukakis, the 1988 Democratic presidential nominee who was defeated by the elder George Bush. Never before had two men who had served simultaneously as governor and lieutenant governor of a state both run for president many years apart, and both been defeated by two different presidents of the other party, to say nothing of two who were father and son. Inbred and sclerotic vie as appropriate descriptions of the two parties' selection processes. Such continuity of power elites suggests little capacity for challenging the status quo. And, of course, the front-running Democrat for the 2008 presidential nomination is Hillary Clinton, from America's third major dynasty. For those of us who grew up thinking that the United States was different, the prospect that it probably is not different is a chastening one.